Hey, this is Corey Darst, and you're listening to my chapter in As the Story Grows.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Dominate.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
I am being realistic.
As the story grows.
I always wanted to be part of a small rebellion.
You got this, Travis. Make them wait for it. Boom.
I was thinking about this today, and the very first time, this is a true story, the very first time that I saw Zayo live was in some small town in, like, northwest Maryland, and there were probably, like, five bands on the bill, and I remember my dad spent the whole show talking to Jesse Smith. And he walked up to me as Zayo was setting up, and he went, yeah, so I talked to their drummer, and they're missing a guitar player and their vocalist. So it was Jesse, Rob, and Scott, and then you walked up, Interested played, you were the opener for Zayo. You walked up, and it was one of those VFW halls where the only sound system was like a single mic for the vocalist, and you put the mic in the middle of the room, and you said something to the effect of, have fun, or have at it, or enjoy. And I swear the opening song had to have been Lies of Serpents. And as soon as it, like, kicked in the, your eyes, everybody dogpiled on top of you. And it was it was madness for 40 minutes or whatever, where it was like everybody got a chance to sing. And it was one of those moments that you never forget, because it was such a communal, awesome aspect of hardcore. And was like this amazing thing, and it was also super disappointing because it didn't feel like you were at a Zayo concert. All that to say, like, you were the like first half dozen times I saw Zayo live, you were the vocalist. And I was just thinking about this before you called. I think you might be one of the most integral members of Zayo, because I feel like you helped bridge that gap from the end of Liberate to touring self-titled, where who knows if without you the band continues on, you know?
Right.
Yeah, it just feels like that era was like an important moment where Zayo was almost at the height of their popularity at the time, and without you, who knows if they continue on or are still a band today, right?
Right. Well, I mean, that It was one of those things where, like, obviously I was a huge fan of Zayo, and dude, Dan as a front man and a vocalist he's unmatched. Like, his lyrics and his vocal styles, just, with what he did, and obviously with where Blood and Fire, with what they brought in, that was like something that no one was doing at the time.
Yeah.
So I when I was given the opportunity to, you know, like, hey, do you want to sing for Zayo? It's, you know, now it would be like, hey, do you want to sing for the Rolling Stones or like My Bloody Valentine? It's like, sure. I'll give it a shot, you know. But no, it was a cool time, man. It was, I think Zayo is one of those unique unique entities that you really, there are so many members involved and they all had their place. And obviously being the front man, like it's a little different because you're kind of the face.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, with that, it's a lot of responsibility, but at the same time, all I had to do was learn the songs, which I knew. So it was kind of like one of those things. And I'm kind of like, as far as, you know, like being in Entrust and Zayo and that kind of thing, it was, I always just wanted to have fun. I wanted everyone to have fun. And that was the whole point. Like, you know, when I went to a show, I wanted to have fun and I didn't want to get beat up or whatever. I wanted everyone to be cool and just have fun. And that's kind of what we did, man. That was the whole, kind of the whole premise of it, especially when I was in the band. It was just like, hey, let's rock and roll, you know?
That's cool, man. That's cool. So let's back up. Where are you from originally? Are you from the Ohio area?
Well, originally I'm from Pomeroy, Ohio. Yeah.
Okay.
So like way, way southeastern Ohio. Yeah. It borders West Virginia. It's just this, I mean, basically I'm from Meigs County, so we're known for marijuana. That's pretty much, that's what Meigs County is known
for. Oh, man. Yeah. What got you into music?
You know, from like, I have my mom and dad to thank for that, because I can remember like the earliest, and I don't even know how old I was. I would have had been like 4 or 5, and I would sit down in front of their stereo and I would play dad's 8-tracks. He had like AC/DC Highway to Hell and AC/DC Dirty Deeds and Led Zeppelin 4 and Grand Funk Railroad. Like that's what I grew up on listening. And it was just something about it, you know, just kind of, I don't know. I just early on, like when I heard music, I was drawn to it. I don't know how to explain it. It's just, you know, it was one of those things. It's like, yeah, I want to play music. I like this. This is fun.
That's cool. That's a good start. AC/DC. So it's kind of an easy transition into like heavier music, punk or metal.
Oh yeah, yeah, completely. Because I can remember, I think one of my first cassettes that I had was like Iron Maiden Live After Death, and when I heard Aces High, it was over. It was like, yeah, this is it. So then I just got into like Wasp and Metallica and Megadeth and Slayer and stuff like that. And I don't know, Vanilla Ice was in there somewhere when I was in sixth grade, because, you know, he just, I mean, dude, he wrote catchy songs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, that was a killer album, but yeah, I remember that because my grandpa, and actually he's the one that had actually just passed. He would, like me and my grandpa had this connection, and it was so funny because he was such like this straight laced guy, but when it came to me, like, I would be over in the cassette section of like the local store, and I'd be looking at like a Wasp album, and there are these dudes dressed up in like leather and bondage gear, and he wouldn't think anything about it. I would just like put the cassette back, and then we'd get out in the car, and then they would say, hey, your grandpa got you something, and then he would give me the cassette, and I'd put it in my Walkman and jam it. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it was, he definitely, he supported anything that I did, and he was definitely like more of a sports guy, but I was way way more drawn to music, and I think he knew that, so he kind of fostered that, you know.
That's awesome. In the documentary, as like aside, I think Dan had said that you at one point played bass in Zayo when he came back as vocalist, which I don't remember, but the point of this is like, was that an instrument you played, or is your gateway into like bands and music was playing an instrument or as a vocalist?
Well, it was, I was actually in college at Ohio University at the time, and I was like huge into like Swedish death metal, like Entombed and Dismember and stuff like that, and then Slayer. Mm-hmm. And a good friend of mine, Brandon Smith, who actually we went on to form the Pretty Weapons, he wanted me, they were in a hardcore band called, what was it called? It wasn't In Trust. Hollow Point. It was actually called Hollow Point first. And, they were just kind of trying to rip off Integrity and Earth Crisis. And the singer, who was phenomenal, he was like, his vocals were out of control. He had moved to like Buckhannon, West Virginia or something. And, they were based out of Athens, Ohio. And he asked me, I was in my freshman year of college, and he said, "Hey, what do you think about singing in our hardcore band?" Brandon and I were always close. Like we both liked the same type of music. Like we loved Fugazi and Minor Threat and Misfits and stuff like that. And, I was like, "Yeah, man. Yeah, we'll give it a shot." So that was kind of where that had started. And then I got introduced, and I'm trying to think. I think it was actually in the Parkersburg Mall where I met Kevin Moran, who used to play bass for Zayo, and he had turned me on to Zayo. And then I got to meet Jesse, and I had got like a couple of their albums, and Splinter Shards, I thought, you know, this is cool. It's like different, but it's cool. And then when Where Blood and Fire Bring Rest came out, it was like, oh, yeah, that's because I loved Carcass. So Dan's vocal style was like right up my alley. I was like, yeah, this is sweet. So I was down with it. And that kind of, once I started in Hollow Point, and then we changed the name to In Trust because we were all like straight edge and some of us were vegan, and it just became this thing to where we had one style, and then one day, and at some point in time, and I'm a terrible guitar player, but at one point in time, like I started writing songs. And then I would take it to those guys, and they're like, "Oh yeah, this is really good." And I was just trying to rip off like Hatebreed. I just wanted like sick breakdowns. You know what I mean? Like it's like my influences at that point were Slayer. I could write a riff like Slayer, like no one's business. And then I just wanted to throw like a Hatebreed breakdown into it. And we started doing that. And then when Blood and Fire came out, I had changed, I kind of had a deeper vocal style, and then I just kind of went to the like Dan Carcassy, you know, style vocals. And then that was pretty much it. We just took off from there and had fun with it.
That's cool. So you knew, Jesse before In Trust?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I had met him. I remember the first time I met him, it was actually in the Parkersburg Mall. Like I met him, and I think Kevin may have introduced us, and I told him, I was like, "Dude, I think you guys' band's awesome." He's like, "Oh, thanks." You know, like super humble dude, like super nice. And he and I had kept in contact. Like he was telling me about like Training for Utopia was coming out with a new EP. So I would just like get music off from him that was coming off from Solid State at the time. And that's kind of where he and I had started our friendship, was just through that music. So yeah, it was Jesse and I've been actually known each other for a really long time now.
That's cool. That's cool. Outside of just like seeing Entrust play locally, I don't really have a lot of information on the band. Was it just like a local band, or were you guys ever signed, or what was your trajectory with Entrust?
No, well, it was basically all of us. It was just like there was like four straight edge kids, and then one dude named Jeff Lane, who's like one of the most awesome guys you could ever meet. He was in it. So we were like a local band based out of Athens. And no one liked us, because Athens is such a weird scene. Like, you either, at that time, if you were in kind of like a Grateful Dead jam band or like a garage rock band, you were in. But if you were in a hardcore straight edge band, like, that was not cool. But we did it anyway, you know. I mean, we had fun with it. So it was pretty much like me and Brandon and Ted White and Nate Gatz and then Jeff Lane. We all just were playing like kind of like metal hardcore and having fun with it. We played a lot of local shows. We played with, we'd have bands out of town. Actually Body Bag Romance from up around the Maryland area. We had played with them, and we did get to play some Animal Rights Fest. I think it was in maybe like Syracuse, New York. We got to play with Earth Crisis and Kill the Slave Master, and I think Race Trader might have played that too. But yeah, we got to have fun with it. It was, you know, we did that for a couple years, and it was just us just kind of hanging out. Athens is it's kind of a unique place. So, you know, we just did our thing and whatever, played shows and music.
So how did you first get involved in Zao? I know you knew Jesse, but what were the first steps of you kind of slowly becoming their vocalist?
Well, actually, I used to go to a church in Athens, and Sean Jonas was the youth pastor. So Sean had called me and said, "Hey, I've got something for you." And I was like, "Okay." And he said, "Jesse wants you to sing for Zao." And I was like, "Really?" He said, "Yeah, I mean, they're going on tour." Sean, bless his heart, he had it so, like, blown out of proportion. He was like, "Yeah, you guys are going on tour with Iron Maiden or something," somebody like that. And I was like, "Okay, yeah, I'll do that." Because I love Iron Maiden. And
that's ridiculous.
And it just ended up that I got a hold of Jesse, and I actually met him up at his house in Parkersburg, and we rolled up to Greensburg, Pennsylvania. And I met Scott and Rob, and we just had our first practice, and Scott's parents kind of like little, I forget, it was like a garage sort of place. And of course my vocals sounded similar to Dan, so I can't remember the first song we played, but yeah, I knelt down behind the amp because I was kind of like intimidated, and yeah, we jammed, and they're like, "Dude, he sounds just like Dan." It's like, well, it's because Dan's awesome, but you know. So yeah, that was it. It was, and then it turns out we weren't going on tour with Iron Maiden. It was Simon Says or someone like that. It wasn't Iron Maiden, unfortunately, but yeah, no. We had fun anyway.
That's cool. So you, I feel like there were some one-off gigs or where I saw you guys where Scott and Rob would be there. I think I saw Zayo in Gettysburg, and it's like Scott and Rob were there, and they had set up, and it was like all the opening bands got to play a little extra longer because it was like waiting for you and Jesse to drive and make the show separately. Was that a common thing?
We were fashionably late. Yeah. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't on purpose. It was, being on the road is such this unique experience that it was rare. I could probably count on one hand the times that we would be within an hour or two of our next gig. So normally we would play a show, we'd go to like a Denny's and eat afterwards. So it would be like midnight, and then we would drive a couple hours and crash in a hotel and then get up and drive the rest of the way. Unfortunately we weren't always the most punctual people. But it was, you know, it was just kind of one of those things. We were exhausted, you know, and we did the best we could.
I'm curious from your perspective what it was like at that time, because you were the vocalist and in the band, and then Dan came back to do self-titled, but he only did the record, and then you were back vocalist in the band, and you kind of weathered some of from the outside or from the internet perspective some of the most volatile time of the band. I wonder what that was like as somebody who was inside it but not, you know, an insider, right?
You know, like, the first time that I toured with Zayo that summer, it was a whole different perspective because I had never went on tour before. So, you know, these dudes were, Scott was in Creation as Crucifixion, and Zayo had done, or Jesse had done Zayo for years, and it was kind of like getting my feet wet, and I wasn't quite there yet. And when Dan had come back, and I had told those guys, I said, hey, you know, we came back, and they weren't sure what was going on. I was like, hey, I'm going back to OU. I'm going to try to get my teaching degree and blah, blah, blah. And they were cool with it. Like, I think for whatever reason, there was a period where Rob wasn't playing bass, and I played bass for one show. I had no idea how to play bass, but I just, you know, it was fun. So all I remember from that is I was like headbanging so much that my neck, I couldn't feel my neck for like the next 3 days. But, once after self-titled came out, and I remember like my brother and I were living in an apartment at the time, and Rob had called me and said, hey, we want you to, you know, come back and be full-time vocalist because, you know, Dan doesn't want to do it or whatever. And I didn't know. And I'd watched the documentary there a couple years ago and realizing, and Dan and I are super close. Like, I go up to him every chance I get and he tattoos me, and I love Dan to death. Like, I think he's one of the sweetest people, one of the most humble people, and very talented. Like, it's just, he's one of those, like, he's kind of like one in a million, you know. You just, if you get to meet someone like that, you're very blessed to get to experience that. But I didn't know what was going on. So when they called me, I said, all right, well, you know, let me think about it. So I told them, I was like, yeah, that's cool, whatever, let's do it. So then I was in like my spring quarter at OU, and I withdrew and we went on the road, and, you know, I didn't know any better. It was just one of those, like, oh, well, Dan's not in the band. It's like, no. Okay, well, I'll sing for you. That sounds like fun. So that's just kind of how it went. And it was the first time, like the first tour, it was weird because there were people that had kind of negative connotations as far as like me, which I understood. I mean, I get that. I mean, Dan Wyant is Dan Wyant. Like he is, mm-hmm. He is the epitome. He, in my opinion, he is the vocalist of Zayo. So, you know, when people would say things as far as like, you know, you're not Dan, it's like, well, I'm not. And it just is what it is. I mean, I'm me. I'm not Dan. Dan's way more talented than I am. And I'm just kind of, I got this offer. It's kind of like the movie Rockstar with Mark Wahlberg, where he gets to sing for whatever the name of that band is that was supposed to, you know, like Judas Priest. It's like, oh, you know, who's going to turn that down? So, and that's the way I looked at it. I mean, it was, I get to meet so many awesome people. I get to play with bands that I absolutely loved and got to meet those guys. And I mean, yeah, I mean, just, it was what it was, you know, I didn't take offense to it. I totally understood. I would be the same way. So that's just kind of how I rolled with it.
Yeah. I think it was, weird, isn't the right word, but, because Self-Titled had just come out and it's like Dan's back and he recorded this new album and then you go see Zayo and it's Corey's back on vocals and you're like, what, wasn't Dan here? And which is fine, because again, that whole like album cycle, you were the vocalist of Zayo when I saw Zayo live, so it's like, it was never weird because it's like you were the guy who always did these songs live. In the same way with like Jason Gleason took over Further Seems Forever right after The Moon Is Down, it's like, all right, that's the guy I'm seeing live perform these songs. And like,
right,
it's the same sort of situation.
It is, and it's you know, hearing it on record versus seeing it live, like there's just something very special about seeing a band live. There just is, you know. And when you see, and obviously like Five-Year Winter is one of the epic Zayo songs, you know, I'm singing lyrics and the lyrics are phenomenal. Obviously they're Dan's lyrics, but at the same time, it's like I'm singing them, but you know, I tried to put as much emotion into it as I could, and it worked out, you know. I mean, it worked out for as good as it did, you know, so it was cool.
Right. It doesn't have the same emotional attachment to you because you didn't write the song and like you get it because it's a good song, but it's not like your words. Yeah. And you got to come out last year and do the end of that song with Zayo. What, in Illinois was that?
Indiana, actually. Yeah, Indiana, at the Emerson Theater.
Indiana, that's right. Yeah, Indiana. Yeah, you got to do that song with them again, which was super cool. And I think when that video made the rounds online, everybody was like, "Oh, that's super awesome." Because I don't think anybody has. You're one of those people who like I don't think anybody has ill feelings towards. Right, it's just like, oh, Corey, yeah, he's like, because again, you carried Zayo through that era, like, so I think there's a connection there, even if people didn't quote unquote like it or understand it, like, there's that connection because you were there at that important time in the band.
Oh well,
right?
and you know, it was just such a unique time. It was Zayo is its own entity, so there have been, you know, multiple vocalists, and I consider myself very fortunate and blessed to be able to be part of that. you know, even I recorded three songs with them. We did that out in Seattle. And, I mean, they weren't, you know, they weren't like the best songs ever as far as vocally or whatever. But just to be a part of it, I think, was special. And,
yeah
it was, Zayo just kind of is, it's its own machine. You know, it just, somehow the right people are there for a period of time, and then that's how it rolls. And and when it's time for a change, then, you know, the right people show up. So that's how I always looked at it. I just had fun with it. It was a great experience.
That's cool. I wanted to ask you about those three songs, which eventually ended up on the Legendary record. The first that was on what is it? This Is Solid State 3. I'm curious if maybe this is super unfair and I'm projecting here, but I don't care. was there any reaction from the fans that I don't did the label have any input into those songs being released and your future with Zayo? Because I know at that point, like, things were volatile with Solid State and they were just trying to get out of their deal and be done. And
well, no, actually, I had sat down we went out to coffee, I think, with Brandon Ebel, and he had talked to me, and he had just asked me before we recorded those three songs, he said, what's your lyrical content? And I said, well, I mean, it's mostly personal. I mean, it's not, I'm not, the way that I write lyrics, it's not like Sean Jonas's style. And I love Sean. I think each vocalist was gifted in the way that they wrote vocals and wrote lyrics. And, for me, it was very much more similar to Dan. Like, I wrote whatever was on my mind and, and just kind of flowed with it from there. So, Brandon was completely cool with it. I assume he was just more concerned that I wasn't like some Satanist or something. You know what I mean? Like, and while at the same time, like, yeah, I'm a person of faith by all means. And, but like I explained to him, I said, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just one of those things. Like, I just write about life experience. That's,
Right. You aren't going to write worship hardcore songs, right? Like,
right. And when they came to us, we were actually out there hanging out, and they're like, Aaron Sprinkle was their kind of producer engineer. They had just built some super nice studio down in the basement of Tooth and Nail of the warehouse. And, we had some downtime out there. So they're like, what do you think about recording a couple songs? So, you know, we did, you know, and it, you know, I think for the most part, like, just on the fly, I think they turned out fairly well, you know. So it, but yeah, there was nothing but support from Solid State and Tooth and Nail. Like, they, you know, they were down with it. So I think they liked the end product. That's cool.
I was just curious because I think I remember like fan response being less than stellar, and then I remember when Legendary came out and listening to the other two songs. Was it All Dressed Up? And I can't remember the name of the other one off the top of my head, but those were definitely the better two songs of the three. And I was like, I wonder why Solid State chose that one. It was just interesting,
right? Well, we had. And I think I don't remember because it kind of all got lost and a little mixed up. Like, the Icarus Complex was the first one. And then, if I'm not mistaken, I think the second one, I had named Stick Angel with Butterfly Wings. And that was, I didn't come up with that, but it was actually an ex-girlfriend of mine who, she said, hey, you should name a song Stick Angel with Butterfly Wings. I was like, oh, that's sweet. And then the third one, I have no idea. I don't even remember what we named it. But I mean, you know, they, like I said, are they as good as anything on Lies of Serpents? And probably not. But I mean, as far as like vocally and lyrically, but the music, I mean, the music is there. I thought it was great. You know, I was just trying to do the best that I could. And I didn't have a whole lot of experience in the recording studio at the time. So it was one of those things, like my vocals live were not the same recorded. I didn't think, you know, I thought they were, I don't know. I thought they were like a little throaty and like not as good, but it is what it is. You know, it turned out, and you know, it's three songs I recorded, so with Zayo, so it was fun.
So what happened after Zayo? I mean, Dan comes back, and then there's no more Corey Darst in the public eye, and I feel like the internet between, like, I feel like at that time, what, HXE.com and Buzzgrinder and Fine Print, there would have been some sort of story on you. What, did you quit doing music, or was there another project, or was that it after Zayo?
Well, no, actually, after we broke up on stage,
I was there.
I had went back to OU, and then after that, like I reconnected with guys that I was in trust with, and we started the Pretty Weapons, which at the time we didn't have a name for it, but it was me and Brandon Smith and Matt Oxier and Tony Akers, and we were all kind of like over the hardcore metal scene. Like, pretty much we wanted to be Radiohead, which we found out quickly is not possible. And so me and Matt started listening to like Black Rebel Motorcycle Club and Jesus and Mary Jane and My Bloody Valentine and Slow Dive and stuff like that. And we were trying to like come up with a name. We had some songs down, and I had this dream that I was in this like clothing store, and there were these people all lined up, it like had a glass front on it, and there were all these people like banging on the glass front, like staring into the store, and they were all like screaming. And this woman walks up to me and says, "You're all the Pretty Weapons." And I went and told that to the guys, and they're like, "Huh, okay. Well, that's our name, the Pretty Weapons." I was like, "Okay." So that was it. And, yeah, we got to record an EP with Chris Commons in Dayton, and we played Athens a lot, and then got picked up by Sean Mutaki of Uprising Records, and he had actually released our album. We went out there and recorded over a couple weeks in California. And then unfortunately we kind of imploded after that. That did us in, but we got a good album out of it. So, yeah, it was one of those things, man. It was, you know, we released that in like the early 2000s and our bass player was married and had a kid on the way and I just got married and a couple of the guys, they were like, well, we need to tour for like 7 months at a time. And I'm like, dude, Zayo couldn't tour for 7 months at a time. Like, what are you talking about? Like, we need to build a fan base. Like, we play psychedelic rock and roll. Like, it does not sound like metalcore. So, kind of have to build that fan base. I mean, people don't care that I was in Zayo when they hear us and we sound like Pink Floyd and Black Sabbath. Like, it's different.
Right, right, right. You can't take shoegaze into the VFW Hall off.
Totally not. I mean, it's like a different scene, but it was, yeah. The coolest thing about it was, and that's what I told those guys, I said, you know what's nice about this is that I play my Rickenbacker, and we were so loud, so incredibly loud, and I'm singing, and I'm like Kevin Shields from My Bloody Valentine, like no one can tell what I'm saying, and yet I don't have to jump around and act nuts. It's, we're just playing rock and roll. Like, I love that. It's just nice. You know, it's something different. Because yeah. I had played, you know, in hardcore bands for years. So it was just something different. So, yeah, we did that and recorded an album. And it, I love it. I listen to it every once in a while. Like, it's just, it's kind of cool to revisit.
Awesome. What was it? Was it difficult to pull back out your screaming vocals last year to do that song with Zayo?
Not really. You know, surprisingly, Dan had come up to me, and it was funny because earlier that year, Scott had called me, and I didn't recognize the number on my cell phone. I had my daughter at basketball practice, and I was sitting out in the car, and the number called me, and I listened to the voicemail, and he's like, hey, Corey, this is Scott from Zayo. I just got your number off Jesse. I won such base. I haven't talked to you in, like, forever. So I called him back, and I talked to him, and he was telling me about, you know, all that had been going on, and I told him, I kind of lined it up, and I was like, yeah, dude, I'm going to come to the Emerson Theater and see you guys. And it was actually funny. We got to go and hang out with those guys, and I took a buddy of mine from work, who is not, he is not affiliated with, like, the hardcore scene at all. So it was kind of cool to, he's like this big 80s rock nut. You know, like, you ask him anything about sports statistics or 80s music, and he's your guy. But as far as, like, you know, metal and kind of indie music, he doesn't have a clue. So I took him, and we got to hang out. And then Dan came up, and he said, I want to have you sing on some songs. And I was like, brother, I don't know that I know the words. That was like... This was almost 20 years ago, man.
Yeah.
A lot's happened since then. But yeah, like, it was cool. Like, I just got up there and kind of did my thing and jacked my neck up for a couple days, but it was fun. It just, I don't know. I think it's one of those things, like, it's like riding a bike. You don't forget. So
yeah.
When it's time to do that, you pull that out and that's what you do.
That's awesome. You mentioned a couple times, going back to OU, trying to finish your, did you ever finish your education? It sounds like you were, looking to, teaching and education. Yeah.
Yeah. It was actually math education. No, I actually didn't. I had, once the Pretty Weapons imploded, and I had quit from there, I started installing DirecTV, and, for anyone that knows me, I'm so not like the technically savvy guy, but I caught onto that pretty quick, and, my wife at the time, she was pregnant. So it was kind of like one of those do or die things. Like I knew I had a baby on the way, so I needed to step up and make some money. And I did that for like 6 years, and then actually got hired on with the phone company. So I've been doing that now for almost 9 years. And, yeah, a lot, since like Zayo and the Pretty Weapons, a lot's happened. So yeah. It's been kind of a wild experience.
Thanks for listening to As the Story Grows. Our theme song was written and composed by the legendary Bob Nana. If you like what you hear, subscribe on iTunes and give the show a rating and review. If you'd like to support the show financially, click on the Patreon link at asthestorygrows.com. If you enjoyed this episode, share it on social media with your friends. Much appreciated, and thanks for listening.